Welcome, Hoops fans, to another electrifying episode of our Hoops Profile Beyond the Backboard podcast, where anticipation meets strategy and young talents prep for a leap into basketball greatness.
My name is Matt Hanifin. With the draft night just around the corner, the basketball world is buzzing with speculation and excitement. Who will be the number one pick this year? Will there be any shocking trades or unexpected decisions that surprise fans and analysts alike? It's the time when dreams become reality and future superstars are shaped.
Let's dive into the top prospects that everyone has their eyes on. These young athletes have shown incredible potential and are ready to make a big splash. Just imagine the electrifying dunks and game-changing plays they're about to bring to the court. Each team is on edge, plotting strategies, making moves, in hopes of securing the next cornerstone player who could lead them to a championship. Are you ready for the wheeling and dealing and potential blockbuster trades that can reshape the NBA landscape? And of course, we can't forget the fans, the backbone of the league. It's your passion that fuels the energy of draft night. Your cheers, predictions make this journey even more thrilling. What are your thoughts? Do you already have a favorite pick for your team? So buckle up, basketball enthusiasts, because the Hoops Profile Beyond the Backboard podcast is set to be a night of surprises and opportunities. Stay tuned as we keep you updated with every leap, pass, slam dunk leading up to this monumental event. Let the countdown begin with your host, A Digital Adele, and my co-host,
Matt Hanifin.
Welcome to Fadeaways on Figueroa. My name is James Brooks. Welcome in. It has been almost exactly a year since my last episode, and my last episode was under the podcast name Lakers Carpool. So if you're one of my listeners before, and it was Lakers Carpool, no change honestly to the podcast. It's gonna be the same podcast, but I started Lakers Carpool when I was commuting to work every day, and I wanted something to do during my hour or so commute, so I would talk about the Lakers, and Lakers Carpool was a perfect name. But for the past couple of years, I've been working from home, haven't been commuting, and I didn't really want my shtick to be surrounded by like having to be recording in the car, or I didn't want my the podcast situation to not make a ton of sense if I wasn't in the car. So trying on a new name, a fresh new look. Fadeaways on Figueroa. Nice little alliteration there, and nice calling back to the downtown LA area where Crypto.com Arena is and all that stuff. So anyways, it's good to be back. I took a year off, not for any particular reason, just family stuff. My daughter is a little over 2 years old, so things are busy at the family. Work is busy. This isn't my full-time job or anything like that. It's just a side hustle that I don't even get paid for, really. So it's more just a hobby, just for fun. So, I hate to be a front runner, right? The Lakers are doing well again. So what, James pops back on the podcast, but when they are doing bad, well, here's the thing. I did 140 episodes before. Yes, I did start the podcast when the Lakers were good and won the championship in 2020, but I did three or four seasons of, playoff basketball, but still not the best Lakers basketball. But I wanted to try something new. I was getting a little tired, I think, of the Lakers Carpool identity and brand, and so I kind of wanted to, I took a break, and I'm here. I think I can make this work. Just wanted to hop back on. Lakers are in the playoffs in the first round, playing against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I got the itch to start talking about Lakers basketball again, and so here we are. So I appreciate you all for joining me if you are listening to this, and if not, then maybe I can just get some stuff off my chest about the Lakers and call it a day. But so the Lakers are in the playoffs. They're tied 1-1 with the Minnesota Timberwolves. First game got blown out pretty bad, bounced back pretty well in their game on Tuesday night. So most of you, if you're listening to this, I always say this, if you're listening to this, you probably are following the Lakers pretty closely, so you don't need a ton of, you don't need me to go back super in depth on like game one and all that stuff. But Lakers are the third seed, right? So they have the home court advantage. Minnesota came in into LA and just smoked the Lakers. And, you know, the big thing here really was just lack of energy. No energy from the team. Luka, he had like 31 points, I think. 37 points, sorry. So he was like the one guy that came out and played really well. LeBron was, you know, 19 points on 8 for 18 shooting, only 1 for 5 from 3. Luka shot 5 for 10 from 3 in that first game. We got basically zero bench scoring. Dorian Finney-Smith had 3 points. Jared Vanderbilt had 2 points. Gabe Vincent had 3 points. And Dalton Connect had 5 points, which I am guessing was kind of... I mean, yeah, that was in like 3 minutes of play. I'm imagining that's in... I was busy working a house project, so I wasn't really super keyed in watching like every minute of the game, but went 15 for 41 from 3, 36%. Whereas the Minnesota Timberwolves shot 50% from 3, 21 for 42, and 51% from the field, 44 for 86. So, let's see, 86. You know, they only got one more three-point attempt and six more regular field goal attempts. So, it's not like they were killing the Lakers in terms of, like, ability to put shots up and whatnot. They just, their shots fell. You know, Naz Reid had 23 points off the bench. And it's hard to beat when you get any team that has some guy putting up 23 points off the bench, plus getting, you know, 22 from Anthony Edwards and 25 from McDaniels. Like, it's going to be hard to beat a team like that. And if you don't come out with energy to shut that down, then, you know, and this is a tough matchup, right? Like, the Timberwolves are a big bruising type team, and the Lakers, not that they're not a bruising team, like they're definitely physical. LeBron will be physical with you down in the paint. Luka's gonna get physical with you. Rui will get physical with you. I mean, Austin Reeves will get physical with you as much as he can. Jared Vanderbilt, obviously. Like, the Lakers are a very physical team. They're just not, they don't have the length, right? They don't have that solid 7 foot center to help rim protect and things like that. So it's a tough matchup in the sense that, like, Rudy Gobert, he had 6 rebounds. I mean, the thing is like, they got smoked in that first game, but it really just came down to, like, I think energy and not trying to, you know, not having the ability to stop, like, Naz Reid, right? Like, if Naz Reid is the difference maker, I feel good about the Lakers. Like, I understand, you know, if he put up 23 in game one, he could do it again in game three. But, like, I mean, like we saw in game two, I mean, we'll jump over to game two right now. Lakers won that game 94 to 85. They had up to a 20 or 22 point lead in the game. They were up 34 to 15 after the first quarter. They had a really bad fourth quarter, which is why it was only a 9 point game to end the game. But had they had, you know, they scored 34 in the first, 24 in the second, 23 in the third, and then only 13 points in the fourth. If they would have put up, let's say, just say, you know, 23 again in the fourth, they would have won 104 to 85, right? But they went on like a 5 minute stretch, like five game time minutes of zero field goals. So you just can't have those types of stretches in the playoffs. I mean, the Lakers got lucky and were able to hold off a bit, you know, Minnesota push. I think the closest they got was, I think, 7 or 8 points in that fourth quarter. So at the end of the day, ended up being okay, but still, you know, obviously got to fix things up offensively, can't get stagnant, all that kind of stuff. But the biggest difference between the two games was Naz Reid. He had 9 points in game two, 3 for 8 from the field, 1 for 3 from three. You know, Julius Randle had a good game with 27 points. Anthony Edwards had 25 points, which is, I think, about what you're going to see from those two guys. Like, that, the Lakers played a really good defensive game, and Randle and Edwards put up those numbers. So I think, like, that's pretty standard for what you're going to see. And then it's the stuff on the edges, those fringe players, right? Naz Reid, Gobert, McDaniels. You know, Conley played 21 minutes, had 0 points. DiVincenzo had 4 points in 16 minutes. Alexander Walker, 4 points in 29 minutes. The Timberwolves went from shooting 50% from three in game one to 20%, 5 for 25. And, you know, I'd be interested to see. I haven't, like, dove deep into the film of the game necessarily, but the Timberwolves shot, it's just, it's really interesting to me how games, the flow of games just are different, right? Like in game one, each team put up like 83 to 85 shots and 40, I think it was 42 threes for the Timberwolves and 41 threes for the Lakers. It's not like the Lakers didn't shoot that well. They did shoot better. They shot 45% from the field versus 38% from the field for the Wolves. But the Lakers shot 20% from three, and the Timberwolves shot 20% from three. Lakers went 6 for 29, and the Wolves went 5 for 25. Luka had 31 points on 9 for 20 shooting. LeBron had 21 points. Reeves 16 points. These are low numbers compared to what we've been seeing in the regular season. From 3 point range, Austin Reeves, Luka, and LeBron combined went 3 for 23. Those are your three best 3 point shooters. Gabe Vincent hit 2 threes, but I mean, at the end of the day, we only made 6 threes the entire game. So while the Lakers had a huge lead for the majority of this game and then almost lost it in the fourth, like, they, you know, I mean, I guess maybe part of this was them going cold in the fourth quarter, but it's not like they came out and had a great game and the Timberwolves had a terrible game. Like, it was a pretty evenly matched, it ended up being a pretty evenly matched game from a stats standpoint and just comparing the teams. And the Lakers, won by 9 points, and, you know, could have been 11, so, like, I think at the end of the day, like, the Lakers have what they need. If the Lakers play with the defensive intensity that they played with in game two, I mean, outside of the Timberwolves just going crazy and shooting 50% from three again, Naz Reid going crazy, even despite the defensive pressure, I just think, like, I mean, Julius Randle can kind of do whatever he wants. Like, maybe that's what they switch to doing. Like, do they just feed Julius Randle because he can go pound for pound with LeBron, with Luka, with even the Lakers' better defenders, right? Like Rui and Jared Vanderbilt, Finney Smith, right? Like, Julius Randle can kind of just pound his way down into the paint and kind of get whatever he wants in some way. So maybe do they just start feeding him? He had 17 field goal attempts. Julius Randle did. Anthony Edwards had the most for them at 22. You know, do you take? It's hard, Anthony. Do you take 5 shot attempts away from Anthony Edwards and give them to Julius Randle? You know, even that out, or does Anthony Edwards take less? Anthony Edwards went 2 for 8 from 3, 10 for 22 from the field. He did have 25 points, but a less efficient 25 points compared to Julius Randle's 27 points. I really do think that for the Timberwolves, if you want to win this game or this series, I think the focus has to be around Julius Randle a little bit more from on an offensive standpoint. And then for the Lakers, I mean, kind of doing more of the same, but just hitting your shots. They missed a lot of open shots. Austin Reeves went 0-for-6 from 3. Most of those threes were pretty wide open. Luka, 31 points, but he went 2-for-8 from 3. He went 9-for-20 from the field. Like, not, I mean, 31 points on 9-for-20, not bad, but would love to see him, you know, go 4-for-8 from 3. LeBron, 21 points, 1-for-5 from 3. You know, a few more of those threes go down, and Lakers, it's an official blowout. It's not a 9-point win. It's a 15-point win. And not to say that, like, adjustments couldn't have been made from the Timberwolves or anything like that, but I think the Lakers have a nice little blueprint. It'll be interesting to see what adjustments are made on the Timberwolves side. I really do think it could be as easy as feeding Julius Randle, trying to just destroy the Lakers in points in the paint with Julius Randle. And if Julius Randle starts putting up, you know, 30-plus points, right, then you have guys crashing down onto Julius Randle, which opens up the three-pointers and stuff. So, like, then you get Naz Reid and Anthony Edwards and those guys, DiVincenzo, with potentially wide-open threes if you have help crashing down on Julius Randle. I do think that the Lakers, between Rui and LeBron, it's like, it, in one sense, Julius Randle is big enough and strong enough that he can get whatever he wants with down, you know, putting his shoulder down and getting to the basket, just kind of playing some bully ball. But, I mean, that's not to say that it's going to be easy, right? Like, LeBron still is 6'9", 2 whatever, 260, 280, or, you know. And, I mean, he's 40 years old, so he's not going to maybe be able to withstand as much of a beating as he used to. But, like, he's still going to stay in the way and stop Julius Randle in some ways. Like, it's not going to be a cakewalk. Same thing with Rui and anyone else that we put on him. But he just is a, you know, Julius Randle is a good finisher down in the paint and whatnot. So I don't know. And maybe this is just like me being old school, right? Like, I think a lot of teams these days live and die by the three, right? That's not no secret. The Lakers have kind of turned into one of those teams, especially with the lack of size in the paint, you know, with the four and the five. Again, the Lakers are a weird team, right, where they lack the length, but they're still a big team. They have Luka's 6'7", LeBron 6'9". Your smallest player in that starting lineup, I think, is Austin Reaves at 6'5". It's not like they're a small, small team. Like, you have matchups where LeBron will be bigger than the guy he's being guarded by, and same thing with Luka and things like that. You just don't have the length outside of Jackson Hayes, who has pretty much shown himself to be unplayable in the playoffs so far. He played 9 minutes in game two and looked terrible on both ends of the floor. One of the dumbest goaltending plays I think I've ever seen, where the ball was just like three quarters of the way down and LeBron or Jackson Hayes just like volleyball spiked it all the way down the court. And then he was like, I couldn't tell if he was complaining to the refs, like he thought it was a bad call, or if he was just mad at himself. I want to say, I hope it was that he was mad at himself, because it was a pretty, you know, boneheaded mistake to do that. And it was weird because, like, it almost looked like the shot wasn't going to even hit the rim. Like, he could have, I don't know, it's a weird situation when that happens, where it's like, even if you were to grab it, they would call it goaltending, but also maybe it would have hit the rim. Hard to say, but it was a dumb play. And he just, already in two games, from a just awareness standpoint, has shown that he is not playable. So who knows what happens there with Jackson Hayes, but like, we've lost, you know, the little length that we did have, we've lost it now, because we can't play him more than, you know, 5 to 9 minutes in a game. So that's tough. But the Lakers are still big enough, right, from a matchup to matchup standpoint, where it's not the worst thing. But, you know, you have to have Rui on someone like Rudy Gobert, and then you have to have LeBron on Julius Randle, or vice versa. You could flip it, right? And Rudy Gobert, thankfully, he's also, you know, not, like, it's insane that he's however tall he is, 7 foot or whatever. And let's see, in game two, he had 6 points. 2 for 5. And then in game one, he had, what did he have in game one? 2 points. And that was the game where they blew us out. That's crazy. Julius Randle only had 16 points in that game. It's hard to kind of like understand the trends and stuff when a team just goes off and hits 50% of their threes, right? It's like, it's hard to not get blown out, and it's hard to beat a team that shoots 50% from three, unless you're able to go toe-to-toe with them. So, in some way, and also game one is weird, right, where it's like, in this case, the Lakers just came out with zero intensity and just got blown out, run off the court. And so, you know, who knows, like, what the best I mean, I think at the end of the day for the Lakers, right, just keep up that defensive intensity. It worked in game two. So obviously keep that part up. And then if some of your shots fall, that helps, obviously. And, like, it's open shots for Luka and for – well, mainly for Reeves. I mean, Luka's always has at least, like, a couple guys around him, I feel like. But even LeBron had missed a few open shots and stuff. So if the shots start falling, plus you keep up that defensive intensity, then I feel pretty good. And then with the Timberwolves, you know, I mean, they're probably going to shoot better than 20% from three in game three, especially playing at home. But if they don't utilize Julius Randle more, I'd be surprised. And maybe they do. I mean, you know, maybe they do go live and die by the three type game plan where they just, you know, try and find, but also, like, going through Julius Randle, especially if he's playing well, can, like I said, it can open up those threes. So you can get more open looks from DiVincenzo and Anthony Edwards and Oz Reed and those guys. So, you know, maybe that is what they do and whatnot. So we'll see. I mean, been a pretty good series so far. In some ways, like, the first game, Lakers got blown out. Second game, the Lakers are blowing out the Timberwolves, at least until the fourth quarter. It got kind of interesting, but also was, like, just hard to watch. The Lakers, it's crazy how with LeBron, having both LeBron and Luka on the floor, they can get so cold. And I'm trying to remember, like, that stretch of, like, 5 minutes where they didn't score any field goals if Luka was on the bench. I think he was on the bench for most of that time. And then he got subbed in and it got a little better. But, I mean, only scoring 13 points in a quarter is not great. And I think the Lakers held the T-Wolves to 15 points in the first quarter. So, in a lot of ways, that game almost evened itself out from first quarter to fourth quarter. Lakers won the first quarter 34-15. And then they lost the fourth quarter 20-13. So, it wasn't as big of a difference. And if it had been, the Lakers would have lost the game. But been a good series so far. It's definitely even though the Lakers lack that length and whatnot, it's been a physical series. A lot of call, like, the game goes through stretches where there's a lot of calls that are just like, man, like, Lakers shot, how many free throws did they shoot? This was also a big point. The Lakers, I think, shot 100% from the free throw line in game two, which is huge. Let's see, where's the free throws? Yeah, 20 for 20. Lakers shot 20 free throws and made 20, and the Timberwolves went 20 for 25. So it's crazy. Both teams made the same amount of free throws, and the Timberwolves got 5 more attempts. But for each team to be shooting 20 to 25 free throws, I don't know what the, I mean, I guess I could look up, like, what the league average is during the regular season, but, you know, that's up there, 20 to 25 for both teams. Usually with the Lakers, people always like to talk about the free throw disparity and how the Lakers always get more free throws. And that happened more probably when you had Anthony Davis and Lakers were just a bigger team. Lakers with Luka now, like, they'd play more of an in-and-out game. I think they're probably shooting way more threes than they did before having Luka. And they're obviously, you know, playing less of a, they still do the pick and rolls and stuff, but, like, those pick and rolls turn more into, like, pick and pops, and, you know, even a pick and roll that stops at, like, in the middle of the key or something, as opposed to, like, a pick and roll with Anthony Davis that was resulting in more plays at the rim, which could, you know, result in more free throws and stuff. But both, you know, bringing that up to say that both teams are just physical teams, and it feels almost kind of like a, at least game two, well, actually both games, I don't know, they both feel like kind of like old school playoff basketball where both teams are just physical and some calls are getting called, some are not. I think earlier in game two, there were definitely some fouls on both sides that didn't get called, which I mean, I'm fine. As long as it's even, I'm fine with it. And then towards the fourth quarter, I think the refs started calling more, and it kind of slowed the game down a little bit more even as well. which I feel like is part of what got the Lakers out of their offensive rhythm in the fourth quarter. But that shouldn't be an excuse. You know, you should still be able to run your sets and with LeBron and Luka and Austin Reeves, find those open shots. And again, in some ways, they were finding those open shots. They just weren't falling, and that'll happen. So for game three, you know, it's kind of – the series is tied 1-1, so the Lakers won the last game. In some ways, the adjustments are on the Timberwolves mainly, but the Lakers didn't play a perfect game by any means in game two. They played a really good defensive game, and I feel like that's what got them the win. Offensively, there's still room for improvement, especially considering that 13-point fourth quarter. Figure out ways to not go into slumps like that for long stretches, because it's impressive that the Lakers were able to survive that. So got to figure out ways to do that. Keeping up the defensive intensity, obviously, it will be important. And then on the Timberwolves side, part of it is just making threes. You know, some of the shots that they missed were good looks. It's not like every single shot they took that the Lakers were perfectly closing out and that's what caused the misses. But I mean, I think on a lot of them, that is what it was. You know, the Lakers were up in the Timberwolves' grill a little more, making them a little more uncomfortable, and I think that helped keep Minnesota from getting into a rhythm and feeling comfortable and stuff. So you can expect them to make more than 20% of their threes probably in game three. Hopefully we can expect the Lakers to get their shots to fall. Lakers historically this season, much better home team than a road team. You know, they only lost a handful of home games. So in some senses, I'm like, I'm a little worried from a shot making standpoint that they're still going to be in this funk in game three. But the nice thing about the first round is you do get some time, you know, you get more time off between games. I think the Lakers have pretty much had 2 days off between each game, which helps a little bit from a recovery standpoint. And I think historically the Lakers haven't played very well in Minnesota either. So that's a little worrisome as well, but no reason the Lakers can't just come out and play with some great defense and then, you know, hand the ball over to Luka and LeBron and kind of let them do their thing offensively. And I think in a lot of ways that should hopefully be enough. Again, outside of the Timberwolves just going lights out and hitting every shot, no matter how good of defense the Lakers play. But fun series so far. Could easily go 7 games. Hopefully the Lakers can get it done in 5 or 6. But I think game three will... The playoffs are funny like that, where it's like you're in, you know, during the regular season, this never happens. At most, you'll play the same team like back to back, but you're never playing up to seven games against them in a row. And so the playoffs are funny, where it's like, you know, it's almost like reading a book, right? Like we can predict what we think might happen and what adjustments teams might make and stuff, but there's no real way of knowing what'll happen. And maybe what I'm saying is obvious, but the Timberwolves could come out with an entirely different game plan than even what I expect them to do. Even with the Lakers, I mean, the Lakers probably have a good idea. Teams can only do so much, but also, you know, they could come out of left field and do something crazy, and that could change the entire series, right? So, and obviously, like this early, if the Lakers win and go up 2-1, that obviously puts the Timberwolves. Their backs against the wall versus if the Timberwolves come out and win, Lakers backs against the wall, you know, each team becomes more and more desperate with every loss. So at this point at 1-1, both teams are kind of in a decent spot where your backs aren't against the wall too much. So then this game three almost is like a game one again, where it's like you can play a little more free and stuff, but then you have the knowledge of like if you go down 2-1, that's a lot worse. That's even worse than going down 1-0. So each team will have their back against the wall depending on how this game three goes. I feel like game threes are pretty pivotal in series. You know, going up 2-1, if Lakers can go up 2-1 while on the road, that helps, right? Like Lakers, that gets their home court advantage back. They lost home court advantage by losing game one. So if they could at least get a win, you know, you got to get at least one win in Minnesota while you're out there. So. But it's been real. I think I'll end there. Appreciate you guys all for listening, and go Lakers.